The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, with the Green Party's removal from government, it'll likely mean fewer cycle lanes. Well, my next guest argues that cycle lanes are a key to increasing road safety. Former Green Party TD, former Green Party leader Eamon Ryan says that promoting roads-based solution to solve our traffic problems is not the answer. Well, Eamon's with me now. Eamon, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
You're enjoying your departure from political activity.
I am. I'm wishing my colleagues in the Dáil and government well. I'm going to continue to working on climate and energy and transport, some of the areas I've been working on for my life. And I'm going to be doing that just in a different way. I was writing an article in the Irish Times yesterday as an example of that on this issue of road safety. And I wanted to point out something that I think is significant and maybe hasn't been told. We know all the tragic loss of death in our roads. Every one is kind of marked and noticed and measured. But there's a separate thing happening, which is a significant increase over the last 10 years in serious injuries. And while our number of fatalities on the road have decreased, thank God, the numbers of, and we have to go further with that, every one is a tragedy, but the number of serious injuries, depending on how you measure the statistics, slight variation between Garda statistics and hospital admissions, but both tell the same story. The Garda figures showing almost a doubling of the number of serious injuries in the last 10 years. And a serious injury is, you know, your broken bones, serious concussion. The medical analysis is, with such serious injuries, if you're hospitalised, you typically be there for 10 days. You can imagine the scale of that.
Okay, but some of these are life-changing. But on the other hand, you might say that technology in cars has improved. So when you have a road accident, someone who might have died 10 years ago won't die now because of airbags, because of better technology, crush zones and so on in cars. So therefore, you're actually saving lives, even though some people have been maimed.
True. And let's say, for example, then, if there was there's an average of about four people a day, according to the Garda statistics, who are seriously injured. Two of those will typically be in a car, be either passenger or driver. And you're right, all the airbags and so on will reduce the impact of those injuries. But one statistically will be a pedestrian, and one statistically will be a cyclist. And they're actually the numbers that have shown significant increase. The reason I was saying that, well, firstly, we cannot ignore that. These serious injuries maim people for life. There's psychological trauma. There's huge cost.
Now, do we know anything more in depth, the forensic examination of those? Because people might say, and they'll draw the wrong conclusion, but they'll say, Eamon Ryan has been telling people to get on the bike and get out walking, and we've more people on bikes and walking who are hit by cars. So therefore, Eamon Ryan is responsible. Do you know what I mean? They'll say the more people that are out there on bikes, the more are going to be hit.
Well, firstly, walking and cycling is good for us.
Sure.
You know, we really know what I mean.
True. Cause and effect.
But we can't, our response can't be, you have to stop walking or you have to stop cycling. Because the health loss, the health impact of that, not to mention, if we go then the alternative, which is a car-based transport system, it gridlocks for everyone. It just physically, mathematically, economically, as well as environmentally, can never work. So we do have to make the shift to make it safer to walk and cycle. The statistics, when I was going into these in detail, I suppose because I have time now, are very clear. With road fatalities, the majority, about 75% of the deaths are on rural roads, often because of high speeds and dangerous bends conditions and so on. But of the serious injuries, the majority, about 55%, but still the majority, are in urban areas. And for pedestrians, it's about 90% in urban areas, and cyclists the same. And therefore, we do have to continue what was started in the last government to make it safer to walk and cycle, particularly for the most vulnerable users.
Now, the most contentious area with some cyclists seems to be the business of asking them to be seen. And I know you were not someone in favour of helmets and so on, but I think you did wear high vis when you were cycling around the place.
Listen, Pat, I cycled here today with my helmet on.
Yeah. But you didn't want compulsory helmets.
No, and I don't believe compulsory. Very few countries. Australia's the only one who's tried it, and no one else having seen their experience.
But the high vis, to be seen. This morning I saw a brilliant cyclist who had a light in his helmet, two lights in the front and a light in the back. And why did I see him? Because he was there to be seen.
Absolutely. I'd recommend everyone to be lit up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
But if that's the only response, we're not going to make it safe. And the international evidence is increasingly compelling that when it comes to cycling, you do need a segregation. You do need to separate out. And part of the reason, Pat, as you mentioned there about, you know, our cars are getting safer. They are for the people in the car, but they're also getting bigger and faster and quieter. And therefore, when they hit you, they're doing more damage because they're bigger, heavier cars.
But so, segregation is all very well if you've got the road space or if you're starting from scratch. And I mean, I've travelled through parts of continental Europe where you've got a main road, and about 50 metres across the way, you see an identical road for cyclists. Mm-hmm. So they never interface with the traffic except at a junction.
And that's why we do have to go with segregation. That sometimes will require difficult political decisions. And this is political decision-making that has to occur at the local level. This is the councils have to make the call here, not central government, because you can't in central government have the knowledge or expertise down to every single street level. So it is ultimately, it's a political question at local government level. Are we willing to make the safe space? And that's for pedestrians as well as cyclists. And it's also very much thinking, how do we integrate people with disabilities in this? And how do we do it, finally, in a way that we can do it quickly and cheaply? Because we don't want to make it what increasingly is happening. It becomes a courts-based, contested row where we don't do anything, or it becomes increasingly expensive to make things safe.
Now, you know the way you talk about the motorist, the selfish motorist, one person sitting in a car and occupying road space. But then you've got one man in a white van with all his gear in the back who cannot take public transport. You mentioned people with disabilities who absolutely, they will go nowhere if they don't have a private car.
I don't think I'd ever describe someone as selfish because they're driving. Like,
no, but one person in a car at rush hour seems to be...
And maybe that person has to be on their own in the car. So I don't think this will work. But how do you cope with that then? Well, I don't think firstly it works if we demonise people. So no one's going to be saying, thou shalt not drive, or you're the bad person. That won't work because all of us, not all of us, a lot of people can't drive.
You have said, thou shalt not burn turf.
I never said that.
Thou shalt not...
Never once.
Never once. So we can carry on then.
Yes. There was never a ban on burning of turf, Pat. That was political play from populist people who were looking to get a vote out of depicting the Greens in that way.
Well,
and that's just
okay,
not
well,
true.
Let me put it another way. Something you did say in terms of the rules and regulations, or certainly local government did, that thou shalt not have a fireplace in your new house?
Again, not true. What we have said is we have to stop our burning of fossil fuels, A, because they're very expensive, B, because we're not secure with those. And I know a lot of people, God, there's 100,000 and 108,000 houses out the country at the moment who are outside without any power, so it's a very sensitive issue. But securing our depending on fossil fuels is expensive and not secure for the country because we don't have them. And if someone's cutting turf and burning it as they always historically done, that's still allowed. That's not going to be stopped. We do have to respond to what's happened in the last 2 weeks. Like that storm last Friday was a complete game changer in the sense the scale of the damage, the force of the winds, the impact on our power system, it has been unprecedented. I think the ESB are exemplary in terms of how they cope with these events. They're a really incredible company. The crews that work there in often very dangerous conditions are some of the best in the world in terms of how you cope with that. But we do have to look and see how will we adapt to stronger storms that are coming because of the burning of fossil fuels, because of climate change.
Now, you said you never advocated a ban on turf. Eamon Ryan insists a ban on the sale and distribution of turf will proceed. A minister's view contradicts comments made by the Taoiseach, who told TDs the ban would be paused.
There was never a ban on turf. It was the stop of the industrial extraction of turf. Illegal. Completely against the law. And if we said at the same time that where somebody was engaged in traditional turf extraction, neighbours, whatever, not a massive, big commercial illegal operation, that would not be banned.
OK, going back to what we've been hearing all the time on the airwaves over the last week since Storm Eowyn, we've heard about people saying, and I can't even light a fire because I've no chimney anymore. I mean, what do you say to those people? My belief is if you've got that kind of a house, you probably have an A-rated house. So therefore, it should not be cold, even in this cold weather.
No, the A-rated houses, I said, have those characteristics. And the decision as to whether you do or don't have a fire is up to the individual. That's not something by government fiat or by central direction. We do need, as I said, to look and see if we're going to get, because of climate change, stronger winds, more storms, how do we cope with that? How do we manage that? And we are going to switch towards the electrification of our transport system and heat as well, for the primary reason that it's much more economic. It actually saves householders money.
Okay, now the answer to people who say, I listen to the likes of Eamon Ryan, the Green Party, I have an EV and I have a heat pump. I don't have gas anymore. I'm utterly dependent on electricity. And now I can't charge my car and I can't run my heat pump.
Yeah, and that's what we do have to look and see. How will we manage what will come because of climate change in stronger storms? And the ESB and the local authorities are best placed to manage that. We do have to, as part of our National Climate Adaptation Plan, which is ongoing and constantly has to be reiterated, look to see what is the scale of backup emergency generation or other systems we need in place to cope with the stronger storms climate change will bring. That's not beyond our powers. But it should not be a retreat from the basic premise that we have to stop burning fossil fuels, A, to stop the storms coming, and B, to give us a more economic, more socially...
In the Trump era, where the drill baby drill and burn baby burn, anything we do will be minuscule.
I don't believe that the Trump golden era of oil and gas is coming, no matter what Donald Trump says. Because the reality is 87% of the investment globally last year was in the renewable clean alternative. It's cheaper. It's where all the innovation and economic development is happening. Donald Trump may want to try and protect and keep an old oil fossil fuel industry going, but I don't believe that the investment and the innovation will go into that area. I don't think he can stop the revolution that has taken place that is needed to protect our planet.
One of the suggestions from Dan O'Brien was, in terms of trying to redress the imbalance in trade between the United States and ourselves, is LNG, that we should import LNG. We need gas. And he said, I'm only paraphrasing now, that just to have one single gas connector under the Irish Sea puts us at such a risk of energy deprivation if that was to be fractured by malign forces that it's almost delinquent not to do something else.
A few different points. Well, we have two, but I take his point. There is a risk attached if those two interconnectors were taken out. Secondly, I do believe that there will be the European Union at that level will look to see whether we can import US LNG rather than Russian, because we're currently still importing significant amounts of Russian LNG, which is funding the war in Ukraine, which has to stop. So I do believe there is a strategic case.
But where do we store it?
There is
not in Shannon, obviously, because you put a ban on that.
Okay, when it comes to Ireland then, so that's the wider European issue. I believe that is a likely development. Now, when it comes to Ireland, we've been looking at this in real depth and detail and looking to see, we have to do cover ourselves against that risk should the gas interconnectors be taken out. The latest analysis that I was working on and saw is that by building further electricity interconnection to the island, by also looking at the likes of Moneypoint, Tarbert, stations like that, which we can switch to HVO, oil-based systems rather than coal, and also the use of new battery storage systems, which are increasingly developing and becoming economic, that may give us the security protection to cover for that eventuality.
So are you ruling out LNG from the United States?
The analysis, we would need something, sorry, going to the technical figures here now, Pat, but we might need something like 6 gigawatts of power. Half our power generation at the moment currently comes from gas. How do we protect should that gas not be available is the key question. With additional interconnection to the UK and France, which is coming, with the use of Tarbert and Moneypoint potentially as backup storage for such an eventuality, in the same way we have to prepare for the storms, thinking about having that backup generation, and also using the really rapidly being built out battery storage systems, I believe we can do it without requiring LNG imports into this state.
Some of the comments coming in. Limerick City full of empty cycle lanes, nobody using them. New bridges, a two-way cycle lane, no bus lane. Surely bus lanes would benefit more. No wonder the Green Party lost their seat here. Hedgerow maintenance needs to be addressed. Hedges have to be cut back to allow better visibility and give people a chance to step in. That's from Shane. A lot of pedestrians don't wear high-vis vests, but the bigger problem I see, no TV promotions for pedestrians who walking on the wrong side of the road with their backs to traffic coming from behind. That's Philip in Cavan. Extremely bad drivers, don't know how to drive or the rules of the road. Narrow, small roads. Nightmare for anyone out there. This one, I feel very strongly about it. I live in Dublin and it's now de rigueur that outside of the immediate city centre, many, many cyclists use footpaths and increasingly motorised scooters. Yes, they're not using cars, but they are hugely problematic. None of these cyclists alert the pedestrian with a bell. I'm in fear of my life as I walk. They zoom past. Group of young lads passed me last evening on their scooters. One of the group got caught at the lights. I asked him how old he was. He told me 13.
Can I say that? Two points on that. Go back to our original discussion. Our cycling numbers are very low because it's not safe. And in any and every instance where we start to make it safe, we see that there's a pent-up demand that starts to be released. But you do have to have a proper end-to-end segregate solutions, which are going to come. Limerick is a good example. I think if you look at the different, come back to what I said, but this has to come from local leadership. I think Limerick City Council are actually starting to show leadership. They're starting to make some of the difficult decisions to make it safe. Just take Limerick City as an example. If we could connect the three colleges, Mary Eye, UL and the Technical University of Munster, all going through the city centre, that starts to give you a core network that I believe is going to be hugely popular in Limerick. It's a flat city. The distances are not that far. Yes, it maybe it rains like ever in Ireland, but you can wear protective clothing against that. It will take off. Secondly, I would say, in this change, the pedestrian has to have priority first. And actually, there is a real issue and a real need for us, a culture within cycling, that we're respectful of pedestrians, particularly if you're on a shared greenway space. We need to make sure that the cyclists and e-scooter people do behave, because actually it starts in a primacy. Firstly, you make it safe with the pedestrian, then you make it safe for the cyclist and people on public transport. Now, the cars also have a role. It's not that you're against cars, but in that hierarchy of protection, when you have a half-ton metal wrapped around you, you're in a completely different state to when someone who is exposed, which is what the cyclists and pedestrians are. And what the statistics show, that we have a real problem. Serious injuries are on the rise and we have to turn that figure around.
A final question for you, really, or maybe it's a comment. Please mention to Eamon Ryan that with a totally reliant air-to-water heating system and no chimney allowed in the house, no electricity for 6 days, we're freezing, no ability to cook, what does he suggest I do? So, I intend putting in a steel chimney and a stove later this summer and at least I'll be warm, and I'm going to put in a gas hob for food for similar circumstances to the storm.
They're perfectly entitled to make those changes. But come back to what you said. In an energy efficient building, which the new building regulations are causing, you will find that, other than maybe there's an example like this in a complete power cut for a week, but in the vast majority of circumstances, you don't need to burn something to heat that home. But it is not, we will not make this shift if it's seen as a coercive. We're going to make the shift because it's a better, cleaner system and more economic. And yes, we have to cope with what may come with much more storms, but that shouldn't see us reversing the basic change in direction to use our own power, to use clean power, and to try and stop climate change in its tracks, because otherwise we will all not be able to cope.
Finally, I should ask you about the loss of the seats for the Greens in the election. Mm. What do you put it down to? I mean, was it misinformation on the part of media? Was it a misunderstanding of the Green Party in rural areas? What do you think?
It's complex. I'm always slow to blame media because that's a bit simple in terms of... I did think we were under relentless attack. Like we were attacked left, right and centre. And I think attacked many instances because we were delivering what we said we would do. We were delivering the changes in the transport system, in agriculture, in energy, in the cultural world, through Roderick's, in the whole range of different social services. And I think some of that times, every politician says, oh, vote for us because we deliver change. We were delivering change, but change sometimes is inconvenient for people. And I think that was part of the reason why we got such a kicking and such attack. But I believe in history will show, and I believe we will come back, that the sort of changes we were making were good for the country. The moment change is not easy, but looking back, I think people say, yes, they actually delivered what they said they would, and it was to the benefit of the country.
Eamon Ryan, former leader of the Green Party. Eamon, thank you very much for joining.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.